It's an absolute pleasure to be here. I consider it a privilege as well. Now, in the interest of time, I've been asked to cut my talk a lot shorter than expected, but as a good soldier, that's exactly what I'm going to do. Anyone here who is interested in a lot of details and a lot more information or an actual copy of what I was going to say, please go to my website. It's arbalistquarrel.com, and you can help yourself to that information. California is the first state to implement the micro-stamping of semi-automatic handguns. On May 17, 2013, the law section 31910B7 of the California Penal Code took immediate effect. The lawfulness of that section is presently being challenged by the National Shooting Sports Foundation and the Shooting Arms and Ammunition Manufacturers Institute. Other states are likely to follow California's lead. We have to see and wait. What is micro-stamping? Todd Lizotte, the inventor of the technology, describes it as a method for inscribing information onto a component part of a semi-automatic handgun. He filed two patents for it and subsequently assigned all of the right, title, and interest in it to a Pennsylvania company, Identification Dynamics LLC, that, according to the patent registrations, is the current owner of it. Why have it? Anti-gun groups say that it has made comprehensive ballistic identification a reality. It enables police to trace a gun without ever physically recovering it. And a traced firearm is a valuable lead in a criminal investigation. The anti-gun crowd has latched onto micro-stamping with enthusiasm, invigorated by the notion that it will solve crime. But does it really work in practice? Not according to the experts. Here are 10 reasons why. 1. Micro-stamping analysis has repeatedly failed tests that were conducted at the University of California Davis campus and the firearms examiner of Suffolk County, New York, who conducted tests in the police crime lab, found the vast majority of micro-stamped characters in the alphanumeric serial number could not be read on any of the expended cartridge cases generated and examined. 2. Studies revealed the technology is easily defeated. The codes on firing pins, for example, were easily removed in minutes, and serial numbers were obliterated using simple household tools. 3. Most gun crimes cannot be solved by micro-stamping, or simply do not require it to be solved, notwithstanding television shows that portray crime solving as impossible without sophisticated technology. 4. Micro-stamping does not allow for the quick and simple identification of spent shell casings by forensic scientists at the scene of a crime. The testing process is laborious and requires specialized equipment that is very expensive. Lizotte noted the need for such equipment in the second of his two patents. 5. According to the BATF, almost 90% of gun crimes are acquired through the black market, and it takes an average of about 11 years for the police to recover those guns. Still, such guns are eventually traced back to the criminal. Micro-stamped guns, on the other hand, can only link a gun to the lawful owner of it. So a criminal is likely to turn to a gun source that can never be traced back to him, the lawful gun owner. Gun thefts are likely then to become more frequent in jurisdictions such as California, where firearm micro-stamping laws have been enacted. Sixth, similarly, one of the largest or biggest dangers is the possibility that anyone could collect micro-stamped shell casings at firing ranges and plant them at the scene of a crime. This ultimately could lead to a false arrest and implicate an innocent person in criminal activity, and police can expend needless resources on a wild goose chase. Is my time up? No. Oh, good. I cut my speech in half. All right. Seventh, it's unlikely that micro-stamping technology would be admissible in court. In 1993, the United States Supreme Court in Daubert versus Merrill Dow Pharmaceuticals, Inc. ruled that scientific evidence produced at trial must not only be relevant, but reliable. Micro-stamping technology to date is not reliable because it has not gone through extensive peer review to warrant a finding of reliability. Eighth, credible estimates by gun manufacturers suggest that the cost of a gun incorporating this technology would increase by $100 to $200. As we all know, a good semi-automatic pistol can range anywhere between $500 to $1,000 or more. This additional expense would place the cost of owning a semi-automatic pistol well out of the reach of most, if not most, all Americans. Ninth, there is the so-called retainer problem. There are millions of handguns presently on the market. None of them make use of micro-stamping technology. California law doesn't require retrofitting of those guns. Could you imagine the backlash among California residents if it did? Also, many handguns are revolvers. Revolvers do not eject spent shell casings. Criminals need only use a revolver in the commission of a crime to defeat the technology. Tenth and final, Smith & Wesson and Ruger will not sell semi-automatic handguns in California. Micro-stamping adds too much cost to the manufacturing process and does nothing to promote gun safety. In effect, then, California's micro-stamping law acts as a restraint on trade. This brings us to the big question. Does micro-stamping infringe on the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms? California's Unsafe Handgun Act is a prelude to gun registration. It requires precisely what Lizotte warns against. It turns micro-stamping of firearms into a de facto registration scheme because California law requires etching more than a random series of alphanumerical characters on a firearm, but the make, model, and serial number on the firearm itself, none of which, at this moment, at least, can be reliably read. As the federal government and certain state governments seek to keep track of all Americans, to learn ever more about us, our thoughts and habits, our hopes and fears, our beliefs and dreams, what we own or what we simply wish to own, the micro-stamping of firearms is yet one more device through which big government controls our lives. Registered guns make confiscation of guns easier. Confiscation of guns is a salient feature of a police state. It isn't a feature of a free republic. Thank you.
Mr. Owens?
Good afternoon. After following some of the speakers today, I kind of got my work cut out of me. Cut out for me. Alan asked me to come here today to talk to you about Nick's system and background checks. I know that we've got a wide range of individuals here from a number of states. If your pistol permit contains a NICS check and that substitutes and you have an alternate permit that you use to buy a gun, can you raise your hand? And I understand that that's the case here in Illinois. Is that correct? Okay, your NICS check on your CCW lets you go into a gun shop and buy a gun. No. Your FOID card. Okay. That's interesting. In Alabama, we recently passed some significant legislation where we are well on the road to being essentially where you are now with our CCW permits. Hopefully, in the future, in Alabama, we will be able to walk into a gun shop and purchase a gun, and the NICS check on our 5-year pistol permit will serve as the NICS check for all purchases. That's a feature of the Brady system that we, as the actual, and it was gun owners that designed the NICS system. This was back, you know, during the Brady Act, was we came up with NICS. We wanted certain features in a background check system. Number one, we didn't want a 7 to 10 day delay. We wanted to be able to walk in, have the check done, and walk out with our gun the same day. Well, we got that. Well, there were some other features that was added into the NICS, and so far, only a couple of states have taken advantage of some of the features of the NICS system, including your permit serving as your NICS check whenever you go to buy a weapon. Very few states are actually doing that now. One of the things that I would want to encourage each of the states to do is to look at that, get your state certified where the NICS check on your permit serves as your NICS check when you buy a weapon. You'll still have to fill out a 4473, but that's as far as the knowledge of the sales transaction goes. When we do this, one of the things that we're doing is we're taking away from Mr. Blomberg and Mother's Demand action, we're taking away one of their most significant arguments, and that is for comprehensive background checks, except they want to take it too many steps too far. The other thing that we need to look at is we need to look at a system to deal with individual-to-individual sales. And here's the reason why I'm going to tell you that. Recently, the Bureau of Justice Statistics did a survey of 400,000 convicted felons who were released from prison in 1 year. They surveyed them for 5 years. 70% of them reoffended. 400,000. 70% of them reoffended. The NICS system to date has stopped gun purchases by over 600,000 felons. Over 600,000. Last year, it was 66,000. Now, I'm going to tell you, I'm willing to give them a mulligan for lying on the form. I'm going to give them that one. We all know it's a felony because they lied on the form in order to get the FFL to submit it to NICS where they got turned down. They had to lie. I don't know of an FFL in existence that is going to submit a 4473 to the NICS system that he knows is going to get turned down. Convicted felons are the single largest denial within the NICS system. And I would tell you that we're not normal. We love guns. I started shooting with the NRA when I was 11 years old. I love guns. I've had guns my entire life. I was a professional law enforcement officer for a portion of my life, and I carried a gun every single day. We love our guns. We love shooting sports. We love hunting. But we're not normal. The rest of America, if you look at the polls, and if you're going to believe them, and I have to take them a little bit at face value, are telling us that a significant percentage of the rest of society thinks that background checks are a good idea for buying and selling of guns. I have a hard time saying that it's not a good idea, especially whenever I know that last year there was 66,000 convicted felons that was dumb enough to walk into a gun shop and try to buy a gun. Doesn't matter. The feds set the criteria for who gets prosecuted and who doesn't. Why haven't you gone to your state legislator and demanded a felony for trying to buy a gun in your state under false pretenses? One of the problems that we have is we do have some false positives. But here's the problem. A false positive is something you can fix. You can fix a false positive by simply saying, well, I'm sorry, we made a mistake. We'll fix it. Next time you won't have this problem. We can do that. Nobody promised you a perfect background check system any more than anybody promised you a perfect Second Amendment. So I think at this point you've really got two choices. You can do like they're doing out in Washington State right now, and I think Alan can reiterate that gun owners in Washington State right now are cringing at the thought of the ballot initiative that's fixing to come up. Or you can seize the day, gird your loins, and get in there and fight for the NICS system and the background check system that actually accomplishes what it is we all know we don't want, which is a bunch of criminals or crazy people running around with guns. It's up to us to help our legislators write the laws that we have to live under. And right now, on the issue of background checks, the only people that are whispering in their ear is Blomberg and Mothers Demand Action. They got a good argument. You want them to write the law, or you want to write the law for yourself? It's up to you guys. I'll be around. There's a lot more I got to say on this issue, but I think my time has just run out. Y'all have a good day, and thank you for listening.
Okay, now I can see you. I'm going to cut mine a little short because we're running very late, and I want to keep us trying to get us back on schedule as much as possible. I really did want to spend a lot of time with you talking about background checks, because I think it's something we really, really need to address. But what I'm going to do is just address what's happening in my state right now, and quite frankly, in some ways, our movement is to blame for it, which I'd like to spend a lot of time on, and maybe I'll be able to do that with you tomorrow when I wrap up at the near the end. But in Washington State right now, because Congress did not act, and my state did not act in any kind of background check whatsoever, the other side decided to file an initiative to the people, not to the legislature, not to places where we lobby or we can control some of who casts the votes, but to the public at large. We were smart enough knowing they were going to do it, because like you have on your desk, Dancing in Blood, Dave Workman, and my book on our opponent's playbook, so to speak. We get a lot of information ahead of time that they're doing because we have plants in their organizations and other places to know what they're up to before they do it. They were going to file this initiative, and we knew what it was going to be like. We didn't have every word to it, but we knew where they were going to go. It's the most draconian background check in the country, so draconian that the provisions in it would never be considered by the United States Congress, as an example. So we file an initiative first. We're known as Initiative 591. They're known as 594. We're on the ballot first. We've raised $1.3 million. They're closing in on $8 million, mostly from a half a dozen billionaires. I don't have to name the names because they've been named here already today. First time on a ballot measure where we're being outspent. Not just outspent, but 8-1. They don't even need to spend 8-1 to us. If they spent no money, they'd beat us. The public opinion polls you see showing 70, 80, 90% of people supporting background check are legitimate and they're real. And the worst part is when you go to subdata on that, the people who support the background checks know they won't work and they don't care. So when you tell them it doesn't stop criminals from getting a gun, it falls on deaf ears. They know it won't work. They don't care. They're for it anyway. Second point, if you ask them, is this gun control, we got to defeat it, including gun owners in general, they don't believe it's gun control. Because I can still have my gun. I can still get my gun. It falls on deaf ears. We do not have a real winning argument. So what we did in Washington State was, which unfortunately can't be duplicated in very many other states, is our initiative has two simple provisions to it. Theirs is 18 pages of very complicated regulations that make it illegal for me to hand you my gun for you to look at if we don't go to a gun dealer first and go through a background check. Okay, and that's what you are going to be dealing with, not just in my state, but next year it's going to be on the ballot in Nevada. In 2016, it's going to be on the ballot in Oregon and Arizona. And I don't know how anybody is going to beat it. Now, in Washington State, because we have a twist in our law, we filed an initiative that has two simple provisions. Provision one, no state agency shall confiscate anybody's firearms without due process. Clause two, no state agency shall enforce any background check that does not meet a uniform national standard, which is in total conflict to their initiative. Right now, they're polling at 72-74% yes. We're polling at 55% yes. If they both pass at the same time, it's a conflict, and they're both considered law, so to speak, and we're off to court to litigate. Our state legislature cannot change anything that passes by the people for a cycle of 2 years without a supermajority. And on guns, nobody gets a supermajority on anything, one way or the other. So we're into a long court battle. Hopefully, if it takes 2 years, it resolves our problem. Hopefully, the courts will say, kick it to the legislature to go do something, or say they're both valid, and the other one can't go into effect until it becomes the Uniform National Standard, which it never will. So we were very clever in how we did that. In some states, you can't do that because the state's constitution's mandate, whoever gets the most votes wins no matter what. Ours does not say that. So we're going to have a pirate victory, hopefully, if the other side doesn't unload a few million dollars in the next 30 days on us and knock us down below 50%. And this is what we're facing, and we're going to face this. Just imagine, think, I want you to just think. If you lose, we already lost background checks in Colorado through the legislature, Western State, pro-gun. You lose by the people in Washington. You lose by vote of the people in Nevada. You lose by vote of the people in Oregon. You lose by vote of the people in Arizona. And where do you think the other side is going to go? They have all the momentum in the world. And where do you think the politicians are going to go? They're going to run for cover, and the cover is not where we can't cover them. Think about it.
Thank you very much. I hope you're at the reception and people can catch up.